You're listening to Humanities Viewpoints, a podcast from the Humanities Institute at Wake Forest University. I'm your host, Assistant Director Amy Meppam. Today on Humanities Viewpoints, I talk with Professors Jillian Overing and Ulrika Wiedhaus about the recent publication of the book they co-edited, American Medieval, Nature and Mind and Cultural Transfer. The project began with the Humanities Institute-sponsored interdisciplinary faculty seminar called American Medieval, which led to the group representing the Institute in Wake Forest in organizing a roundtable discussion on the American Medieval at the Leeds International Medieval Congress in 2014. We discussed this project from a number of different angles, including developing a definition, connections between American Medieval and our contemporary world, approaching these topics in the classroom, and future projects inspired by all of these collaborations. To hear even more about the book and to meet some of the contributors, Wake Forest faculty, staff, and students are invited to attend a book launch celebration for American Medieval at 4 p.m. on Tuesday, March 14th, in the Ammons Lounge of Tribble Hall. Join us for conversation, readings, and refreshments to celebrate this exciting new work. Jillian R. Overing is a professor of English at Wake Forest University, where she teaches courses in medieval narrative, Old English language and literature, gender and landscape studies, history of the language, linguistics, and women's and gender studies, as well as seminars in the English major, multiple team-taught interdisciplinary honors courses, and seminars in major British writers. She received her PhD from the State University of New York at Buffalo before joining the Wake Forest faculty in 1993. She has published numerous articles in scholarly journals and was a commissioned editor with Claire Lees of Gender and Empire, a special volume of the Journal of Medieval and Early Modern Studies. Her books include Language, Sign, and Gender in Beowulf, Landscape of Desire, Partial Stories of the Medieval Scandinavian World with Mary Jane Osborne, A Place to Believe in, Locating Medieval Landscapes, co-edited with Claire A. Lees, Double Agents, Women in Clerical Culture in Anglo-Saxon England, also with Claire A. Lees, and most recently, American Medieval, Nature and Mind and Cultural Transfer, co-edited with Ulrika Wiedhaus. Ulrika Wiedhaus received a PhD in Religious Studies from Temple University. She holds a joint appointment in the Department for the Study of Religions and the American Ethnic Studies Program at Wake Forest University. Her research interests focus on the history of Christian spirituality, with an emphasis on gender justice and political history, and most recently, historic trauma and the long-term impact of U.S. colonialism. Her most recent book-length publications include American Medieval, Nature and Mind and Cultural Transfer, co-edited with Jillian Overing, American Indian Women of Proud Nations, Essays on History, Education, and Language, co-edited with Cherry Beasley and Marianne Jacobs, Medieval German Mysticism and the Politics of Culture, and Trauma and Resilience in African American and American Indian Southern History, co-edited with Tony Parent. I hope you enjoy our discussion. Well, thank you so much for being here today. I'm interested in the story of how the interdisciplinary seminar American Medieval came to be and what eventually inspired the American Medieval Book Project. Could you tell us that story? And in doing so, could you touch on, as you do in the book's introduction, the challenge of defining American Medieval?
Well, we began with the format of the Wake Forest University Humanities Institute faculty research seminars, which we co-directed. And we had done one the previous year, very specifically on landscape, and there was one or two of the same personnel, and we then developed a seminar on American / medieval. The challenge of definition, we have a whole chunk of that in the introduction. That was one of the most interesting parts of this, and it continues to evolve. When this project was in its very early stages, well, perhaps I should backtrack a bit there and say the seminar then led to us doing a collaborative discussion, a round table at the International Medieval Congress in Leeds, UK. Mm-hmm. Ulrika was approached at the Congress by a very well-respected German press, and discussions began, and the project turned over very quickly. We got our authors together, and probably within a year, I think it came together. So they were very keen and very supportive. This project has been blessed in many ways by your support and by a very eager and supportive press. But as to what it is we were doing, American / medieval, I call it a / other more literate persons in our group wanted to call it a glyph. But when we were first trying to write grants to get money to do this, we were often asked, what do you mean by medieval? Nobody ever asked us what we meant by American. which was another interesting piece of this. We initially said, well, it's the usual time period, 500 to 1500, and there's 1,000 years of so much. What we had wanted to do was talk about some deeper ways of imagining our connection to the deep past that went beyond ideas of medievalism. I mean, we love Monty Python, etc., but we wanted something that was ways that the past and the present could source each other and be inspirations for each other.
Okay, so maybe I can jump into this. Our original group consisted of expats. So Sol Miguel Prendes, Tina Boyer, Jillian, myself, Claire Lise. And so we realized that us Europeans carry a medieval world in us, and we brought it with us across the Atlantic. And then we were wondering how it is for Euro-American settlers who carry the medieval in multiple ways, but perhaps subconsciously and based in the domain of desire, of nostalgia, but very importantly also as a particular settler state identity. And the more we kept talking about this, we realized that there were broad categories in which we could sort those nostalgic moments for good and for bad. And so one is a category that we call old trauma, that it was very important to us to name the origins of hegemonic and discriminatory racist policies, also anti-Semitic policies in the medieval European space, and that the nostalgia has to be really bracketed by those forms of Euro-American settler identity. So that's what we call old trauma that iterates. The second large category was that of, you know, the vigor of a settler state in terms of creating new archives. And these new archives show up in really amazingly creative ways. So that would be Game of Thrones. That would be the furry conventions. That would be the Renaissance fairs and the medieval fairs. And there's enormous energy in these modalities. And I think it behooves us to pay attention to that, how they create archives that are vibrant and alive, and possibly more alive than our scholarly work. And then the third one is one that both Jillian and I feel profoundly passionate about, and that is the non-human world, the elemental world, the world of those who fly, of those who swim, those who crawl, and Euro-American technologies and disconnections from those worlds have brought our planet in great crisis. And it was really urgent for us to tease that piece out. And so we call that third domain creatures on the move, because apart from us humans, cranes, herons, swans, different kind of fish, you know, they all have their own Middle Ages, and they have hung in there for hundreds and hundreds of years. And we owe it to them to have their voices and their forms of being acknowledged. So there is a non-human medieval, and our book reflects that. So I hope we make a contribution to the conversation about quote-unquote medievalism in really highlighting those three domains.
These three categories are, we envisage the idea of American medieval. I'd just like to get back to the slash or the cliff,
right, yeah.
Where we are seeing an apposition, an intersection. It's a piece of grammatical finesse, because we don't know if one is qualifying, describing the other, how they are interacting. So these three categories that we have, trauma, new archives, and creatures on the move, are all profoundly intersected. We never leave behind the old trauma as we move into the environmental passage. Mm-hmm. So we've used a lot of water metaphors, which is something that reflects another body of work I've been doing for a while. But we like the idea of flow, eddy, passage, and we really see this as a moving kind of idea. I'd like to just read one of my favorite chunks, sure, from the introduction here. We use Eugene Gendlin's felicitous concept, where we want to offer a felt sense of the past in the present and the present in the past. We want to claim that American medieval has been and will remain an emergent project precisely because the American, or the AM, we call it AM, the AM complex is alive, breathable, usable, marketable, relevant, and has tremendous power to signify exuberance, fear, and grief, to evoke a sense of belonging and of being in the world as Euro-Americans, for better or for worse.
Several of the essays in the book explore topics like Game of Thrones, role-playing games, and furry conventions. Could you elaborate a bit on these and other connections that this idea of the American medieval, or AM, has to our contemporary world?
So we definitely are struggling with the notion of linear time, and I think underneath our work is something that looks absolutely nonlinear in a way, and that has different time spans that allow for the medieval to be really very present and the present to be very medieval. But as the medieval was never homogeneous, as the medieval was never a closed project, as the medieval understood itself as something that was in motion, open-ended, and had a different sense of temporal sequences, I think some medieval people might be very comfortable with us looking at the kind of now of the medieval present. And so as we look at the furries, as we look at Game of Thrones, as we look at architecture, we have a fabulous article in our book by Joshua Davis on the machine Gothic and the cultural memory of the future, where we explore precisely those iterations as a kind of eternal now, in a way, to use a loaded term from religious studies. We just think that the past is never not present.
A connection that is evolving, and a very deep one, is brought up in Tina Boyer's essay, where she talks about the creation of internet monstrosity and the kind of community storytelling that produces this idea of monstrosity and also produces some very dangerous consequences. It may seem a glib analogy at the moment to talk about the connection between orality, oral cultures, and orally transmitted cultures and the vast world of the internet. But the idea of community authorship, community development, community understandings of especially ideas of monstrosity is a deep connection. It's a deep and traumatic connection to the past, but it is also the community aspects are very much alive.
To answer your question, this kind of presence of the medieval shows us in so many ways. And Claire Lees wrote a marvelous chapter on poetry and how contemporary poetry picks up on that. And I would just like to read a few lines from a poem that shows us those connections and really creating a new archive that connects creatures on the move with that perhaps most Christian medieval institution of all, monasteries. And it's by W.N. Herbert, and the poem is called North of the Book. And here are the poems where he invokes the medieval monastery, showing its medieval now in the animal world. W.N. Herbert, North of the Book. Cuthbert's cloud crypt is barely blue-flecked. Beneath it, wrapped his bestial elect, witness the bay as a sunken boat in which the sea-fowl gospels float. Hermit crab with trembling claws grabs scuttled garb and ragged withdraws. Abyss cod knows the abyss is as close to God as the white cloud is. Abbot Herring, in a habit of silver and a crowd of uncaring, is a harp that shivers. Venerable bee levitates while a harebell history reverberates. Saint Snail can't explain, but his pilgrim trail is a glittering stain. In the third part of our book, Creatures on the Move, British scholar Claire Lees examined the medieval and the modern in three poets and in three poems. And it's a very delicate, very thoughtful manifesto of our book from a poetic point of view at the very end of our essay. And along the way, as we read those poems, we uncover a kinship with and respect for the past in all its varieties in the present. Put differently, poems argue for a post-disciplinary criticism, generous in its awareness of the importance of multiple approaches to poetry, place, and culture. This, I would argue, is one expression of the American medieval.
Her chapter lyrically follows, and I'm quoting her, "the long craft of words and stories, past and present, shadowing one another, moving from place to place, breathing new meanings into old ones."
So could you talk a little bit more about how the faculty seminar and the book project affected mm-hmm. your teaching?
Well, Ulrika and I have taught many times, and we're always reinventing ourselves. But this particular class has been, it's an uncanny moment in history, and this course in Place and Time, as we talk about old trauma, as we talk about care for the environment, as we talk about monstrosity, as we talk about the meaning of our pasts. We always work with teams, with groups, and we are lucky enough to have an honors class of students that are wonderfully present and hardworking and who have taken on the challenges of this course wholeheartedly.
The influence on teaching is that our core hermeneutical concept of seeing the American medieval as emergent and impossible to end, there's never going to be a final word on this, is that every class is a surprise because we allow for that emergence to be present. And so we see ourselves not so much as teaching our students something, but as co-creating based on some very rough guidelines that we have consolidated in this book. In terms of structure, our honor seminar has made an effort to invite as many authors as possible to speak about their research. And it is absolutely fascinating to have the letters, to have the readings, and then have Professor Boyer, Professor Miguel Prendes, in a few weeks, Professor Hurley, Professor Siegel, Professor Zulik, etc., come and present their research and asking the same questions that you are asking of us.
Yes.
Precisely the same. Yes. It's fascinating to see how that evolves and then have everything become so alive. So what Jillian said just a couple of minutes ago, that when she read from our introduction, how we feel that there is an incredible aliveness to it, both in the wounding, both in the trauma, the ongoing trauma, the ongoing hegemony, the ongoing oppressiveness of whiteness, but then also that area where there is something that is very deep and very old in a profound non-hegemonic way. And it's a very difficult balance to strike. So Professor Miguel Prendes talked about borders, bridges, and fences, and I think she really nailed it in that. And so we constantly find those borders, bridges, fences, and we bump up against them in the class. And it's very hard. You know, when we talk about the current politics regarding illegal immigrants, for example, or the rise in hate crimes, and the ongoing anti-Semitism, capitalism. I wrote a piece in there about capitalism and its many discomforts. So, you know, it's always borders, bridges, and fences.
One other unique aspect of this book has been, as Ulrika said, the fact that we've had other professors to come in and talk. And I think this has been a really powerful means to show the students not only our collaboration, but to invite them into it. I really feel that the collaborative scholarship and the way humanities scholarship works, which is kind of dilatory, comes in waves, eddies, flows. This is our American medieval paradigm. And I feel that the way the teams have been working in this class, because I have always done a lot of group work in classes, it's an essential principle for me. But I feel the way that these teams have been working, coming together, has been very interesting and somewhat unusual, because they are, sometimes they're weirdly excited, but they're very intense and very focused. So the classes have been powerful, I think, because of the methodology and because of what we're trying to invite them to do with the book.
The humanities, yeah. You know, the Humanities Institutes of engendering and nurturing and supporting interdisciplinary research has been really at the core of our project. You know, when you look at all of our contributors in the book, they're from so many disciplines, and then and that has been tremendously productive of new knowledges, new knowledge domains emerge in this conversation. But then what we could do through adding our team taught honors course is to really extend that rich humanities interdisciplinarity into the classroom by also seeing our students as collaborators. And we really become a community in that in new ways. We still have to grade them. Right. There is a bit of a rub, but yeah, that is probably the most wonderful, enriching time. And so we never know when we start a class how it's going to end, because it is so very emergent. And we love taking that risk, and we trust each other very much. You know, I think we think very highly of our work respectively, and so that it makes a huge difference.
Could you talk a bit about what is next for the American Medieval Group? Where do you go from here?
We have another ongoing project, the two of us, which may also involve Claire Lees and a collaborator of mine from way back, with whom I did a book on landscape in medieval Scandinavian world. So it's interesting how some past work is coming back from 20 years ago, merging with this work, and now Ulrika and I's plans to go to Greenland next year in order to extend some of the work I've done on the Icelandic sagas and medieval and modern understandings or crossovers in terms of landscape, the experience of place.
I really feel that we are really teasing out the fourth category that's not so much in the book, and that is working with Eugene Gendlin's notion of a felt sense. And so we are really interested in the medieval body in a medieval landscape and unpacking that. And so there are multiple ways to do that. And we felt, it was our felt sense, that going to Greenland and being in that space the way it is today, and just exploring that in a new modality, and that is my passion, and that has always been an undercurrent in our American medieval work, and that is contemplative pedagogy and contemplative research methodologies. So we want to tease that out and work with that some more. And one is the Greenland project, and then for me, and it weaves in and out with Jillian's work, but then the way it shows up for me, and again, many thanks to the Humanities Institute, I'm currently also hosting another Humanities Institute faculty seminar, and this one is on contemplative research methodologies, and we have enormous fun, and it's incredibly innovative. It's so innovative that we all feel we have to pull ourselves back from staring into the abyss. We shall see where that goes, but I think it's a game changer. I think it's really a cutting edge, and I think it's wildly, wildly productive in ways that we can't predict yet. So we want to fold that back into our interdisciplinary knowledge about medieval religiosity, mysticism, spirituality, being in place, exploring medieval architecture, and then also especially the contact point. And we both have done work on that for Europe. So I have done medieval Germany and conversion issues in text from the 10th, 11th century. Jillian has worked all her career really on those intersections as regards Anglo-Saxon traditions. And we want to see whether there is like an indigeneity nexus there that we can tease out as we physically get to Greenland. Mm-hmm. And then there is a contemplative pedagogy piece. And I've been committed to doing that for a really, really long time now. And I'm curious to see where that can go. With our other faculty, we are in conversation with them. We'll see how creativity will keep our little boat afloat. And perhaps they can speak to that at our wonderful event that we'll have planned for the 14th of March.
One aspect of our class that has been particularly successful has been Ulrika's introduction of contemplative pedagogical techniques, which we have used before. But in this class in particular, especially when we have been talking about the idea of a felt sense of the past, the idea of monasticism and understanding monasticism on a different level, we will be doing some walking exercises. We do sitting, breathing exercises. We bring those contemplative techniques into the classroom. And with this material, it has been a very satisfying experience, a very meaningful experience. The process of this project and the way that we work collaboratively, this has provided so much grist to the mill to think about how we do what we do and what is meaningful and rich and productive about it.
Thank you so much for being here, both of you. It's been lovely to sit down and to hear about this project, a real privilege. Thank you so much.
Our pleasure. Thank you.
That was Professors Jillian Overing and Ulrika Wiethaus on the American Medieval. Don't forget to join us for the American Medieval Book Launch Celebration at 4 p.m. on Tuesday, March 14th, in the Ammons Lounge of Tribble Hall. You can find this and other episodes of Humanities Viewpoints at humanitiesinstitute.wfu.edu/podcast or on iTunes in the podcast section. Thanks for listening.